Let's see. Can you hear me all right? Am I good?
I can hear you just fine, brother. Oh, man, this Family Guy is pretty good. He's nothing like more than Cheetos and Family Guy reruns.
Dude, I've become a Family Guy apologist, I have found. First couple seasons are very funny. And then when it came back, it wasn't great. And then randomly, I watched it, like a recent episode. It's like, it was pretty good. There's a reason why this show has been on for like 50 fucking years. Or
are they still making it? I don't even know.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Golly.
Yeah. Seth MacFarlane and Matt Groening might be the two like wealthiest animators to ever do it, you know?
Yeah. Just shows how long it's been since I watched it. Yeah. He had Epstein money, baby. This shows how long it's been since I've actually watched TV, which is, you know, crazy.
You've seen Andor and The Pit.
I have. So we still haven't finished Andor. So instead, we started, because my wife hadn't caught up with it, we started watching season 3 of White Lotus. So now I've seen season 2 all the way through. I've seen a couple episodes of season 1 and then a couple episodes of season 3. It's just a fucking mess, Connor. Can't get my shit together at all.
My fiance and I, we try to do they're like, let's watch something together. And inevitably, it's just like, I'm just going to watch this on my own.
Yeah, fuck it. Yeah, it just doesn't work.
We tried watching that German sci-fi series Dark together, and like, you know, she would fall asleep or she'd be looking at her phone, and I'd just be like, man, if I watch any more of this while you're asleep, you're going to be so mad at me, even though you're asleep.
You mean Unterschwarzkarten?
How's it going, dude?
My allergies are going crazy. So obviously our audience can't see it, but my eyes are like bright red. I did a bunch of yard work today, and I don't know, it just hit like right before we started recording.
Are you allergic to grass?
I mowed the grass. I pulled a bunch of weeds. Yeah, like the shit like that.
But are you allergic to like fresh cut grass?
Oh yeah, I'm deathly allergic to like grass and like like straw, right? When they cut straw out in the country, I like start dying.
Jesus, why do you live in Lake Charles of all
parts? I don't know. It's usually fine. It's usually fine.
Well, today it's going to sound like a episode of Adam Friedland's show with how much you're snorting into the mic.
Oh, is it? Yeah. There's going to be some of that going on, y'all. I'll try to edit most of it out, but I'll try and mostly do it while Connor's talking.
Yeah, well, you did send me a column from the 1980s that I was thinking that we could read in full later in the episode, because it is, the more I read it, the more I was like, this is, I mean, hey, history doesn't repeat itself. It rhymes.
Yeah, by the way, this is the Cockburn-Walter Lippmann thing that a listener, Gabriel, sent us. So thank you, Gabriel. It is
Gabriel.
It's really perfect. Alexander Coburn, you know, essay, and
it's pretty good.
It's really spot on. I mean, it just really goes to show you that the kind of like insipid, always wrong, perennially stupid, like op-ed writer, you know, I'm thinking of Matt Iglesias, I guess, mostly, I'm not going to lie, has existed for literally a century in the United States. And they were exactly the same during the First World War, which is crazy.
I should have reached out to Hayden Tank of the Biblical Lore podcast to ask, like, dude, were there like biblical op-ed writers?
Yeah. Who are the Roman op-ed writers? Well, I mean,
they're just like, this Jesus guy's a heretic.
Cicero had some bad takes, but I don't know if you'd put him that high.
Plato had some boring takes. Sometimes
famous annoying Roman contrarians.
I mean, yeah. Talk the ultimate contrarian, fucking Socrates. Just be like, someone could be like, so this table is, and Socrates would be like, but sometimes it isn't.
Is
like,
it? Shut up. I mean, he died for that, Connor, right? Which I'm just saying, right? Socrates was fucking annoying, and they killed him.
Like, oh wow! So you're saying this table? You're saying this wolfbane poison isn't? Well, guess what? It is killing
guess
you,
what, bitch. It is. You aren't.
Oh man!
Oh man!
Sometimes Socrates is alive, and sometimes he is not. Ha ha ha! It's Monday, September 1st. Pay your rent, everybody. It's Labor Day. Happy Labor Day.
It's American Labor Day. It's not May 5th or whatever.
Oh yeah, May Day.
Yeah.
So shout out to all the union workers who fought long and hard for this day off, and for all the other things that we have, such as the 40-hour work week, and
things that will soon be going away forever.
Yeah. Ooh, geez. Shout out to my dad. He was in the IBEW. Love being of union ilk.
International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
Yeah. They got a cool fucking logo, dude. It's like the fist with lightning bolts coming out of it.
There's like there's one on one of the highways I used to drive to work on, but I think it's closed down because they've moved it across town or something. The sign goes hard as fuck.
Yeah. I think the Teamster sign's kind of whack, just the two horses.
I don't know if I've ever seen the Teamsters one. It immediately came up with like Google came up with a Grim Reaper one. I was like, I'm sure that's not it. Oh yeah, it's like two horses and like a wagon wheel. Yeah, that kind of sucks. Yeah,
IBEW at the coolest one.
Teamsters Union Till I Die with the Grim Reaper holding like a playing card. Oh no, it's the logo. Okay, that's way better.
I got a question for our listeners, and if you're out there and you know the answer to this. This is a serious question. Whenever I ask it to people involved in this union effort, I get treated like I'm trying to gotcha them or something. And it's really frustrating. And I think it will behoove these people to have an answer out there. But Starbucks Union, why are they not choosing to unionize with the like fast food workers or grocery, like grocers unions, basically? Well, I don't know the name of it. No, they're trying to start their own thing. Because when there was a unionizing effort at a company I used to work at, which was a subsidiary of Maximus, which if look them up, man, they're like talk about evil corp kind of bullshit, Omnicorp kind of stuff. But there was a unionizing effort in one of their subsidiaries, and they chose to try to partner with the CWA, the Communication Workers of America.
Okay.
And I mean, I don't think the union got off the ground, but there was a whole thing in Washington, D.C. that a listener of the show went to. And so, hey, you know, if anybody out there knows why the Starbucks Baristas Union is not working with the larger union, I would love to know. Maybe it's a strategy. Maybe it's because I think when they hear me ask that, they're just like, oh, wow, you think you're too good for them or something like that. But it's like, no, I don't work at Starbucks anymore. Can you tell me what is happening? Why is this happening? There's something going on in this country where people don't want to ask the questions answer the questions I'm asking.
The question, what's going on?
Yeah. Anyway, we got some cool stuff to talk about.
We do. So I did like briefly because first, I mean, we got to get to the biggest news of all. But like it's been a really stupid, I don't know, week and a half, I think, since we last sat down to record, Connor. Like,
yeah,
it's just been stupid shit after stupid. I don't even know if it was like in the past 2 weeks, but like the stupid fucking jeans, Sydney Sweeney jeans bullshit with like American Eagle. That was like totally fake.
Oh, that was a while ago.
That was a while ago. But I mean, it was still talking about it like
fake. It came out that it was fake.
Well, fake. Yeah.
Well, so, the outrage was manufactured by bots. There were real players, but there were, you know, Chaya Raichik of Libs of TikTok and others were just like using Twitter bots to just like keep it trending, keep it going, to manufacture some outrage. And I'll link to the study in the show notes that found that. But I know
Ted
I
too right, just yeah. like talking about it out of nowhere.
And I know I spoke to you ad nauseum about how I truly believe the Cracker Barrel outrage was more of the same.
Yeah, yeah. Then the Cracker Barrel thing, just a bunch of like absolutely manufactured, just like nonsense stories. Then, I mean, the past couple of days, it's been like the Taylor Swift engagement shit, which is like, I don't care. I don't hate Taylor Swift. I don't hate, what's his name? Travis Kelce. I just don't care. And then I think they tried to do one on Friday, but it didn't catch, which was like a controversy about Sydney Sweeney dating Scooter Braun,
Scooter
which is
Braun.
Actually related Braun? Is it Braun? Which is related to the Taylor Swift thing because he's the guy who used to own her Masters or whatever. And he does seem to be like literally an evil Hollywood freak, like recording artist freak. Also,
yeah, he discovered Justin Bieber.
I mean, he is Jewish, and like he's the closest to like a modern like Shylock that like I've ever seen as well. Or in like in this age of like growing anti-Semitism, it's really bad to be the guy that owns everybody's Masters and like is exploiting people. Oh, it also loves Israel, so it's just like, oh yikes.
Yeah,
every part of it's
Sydney Sweeney is not necessarily beating the crypto conservative allegations. Like first it was like she's registered Republican in Florida. And I'm like, okay, whatever. So, I mean, who knows? She's registered to vote the Republican in Florida, but somebody could have signed her up. Who fucking
cares? Who gives a shit? She's the booby lady, right? Like, I'm not going to watch or not watch a movie depending on somebody's political like allegiance, right? Like, not for this show, not in like my real life, right? Like, I'll still watch anything that fucking Ed Wood's in. Right. Like, yeah. And I don't know. He's about as evil as they come to me.
Yeah. And as I said before on this show, and I'll say I need to make this as a shirt. But like, if you're watching problematic media and you don't want to have to defend yourself, don't tell anyone.
Yeah. Yeah. Just don't. Yeah. Just the people that are annoying about it. Don't tell them. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Find your
friend at the Louis C.K. apologist and talk to him about the the two specials.
I mean, when Craig Zoller finally comes out with a new movie, hopefully soon, I will be seeing it. And that guy's fucking insane. He's a crazy fucking racist fascist. So fucking crazy and funny, though.
Yeah, we'll be watching it, and you can guarantee we'll be reaching out to Nate Smith to come back onto the show to talk about Craig Zoller.
I might steal the movie, to be honest. But anyway. So given the fact that like the past couple weeks have been really stupid, I figured we'd dive right into the fucking dumbest shit that's been going on lately, which is Donald Trump, our president, is fucking dead. Connor, he died.
He died.
He died.
He's dead.
So Izzy, I don't know. I missed the first bout of this. Like, if you don't know what I'm talking about, then you are normal. I think people saw like pictures of his hand looking gross and purple, and then he had makeup on it or something. He like literally went to a press conference. His hand was like bruised.
And he had edema. His feet look bad.
Yeah, that was a couple weeks ago. His cankles were like looked crazy.
Oh, he looked so bad.
So everybody started, and then he like didn't show up for a couple days. Like he didn't do any press conferences, and he like wasn't being reached. So everybody started having fun on Thursday, Friday of last week, and just posting like, I guess he's dead. Trump is dead. Yeah. He has to come out and show himself, otherwise he's dead.
And
it's still going.
Also, his family members haven't been posting. His tweets have a different vibe to them. Although some people have pointed out to me, like, he doesn't even write those tweets. I'm like, yes, he fucking does. And it's very clear.
He dictates them, but like these are way too. They're like too smart to be Trump tweets.
Dude, as I kept like going through the analyses of like how they're written, I kept thinking like this is like Thomas Hobbes or like fucking or even Thomas Pynchon's Mason and Dixon of like the random capitalization of letters. Like I'm reading old English treatises.
Yeah, it almost looks like somebody's like encoding a message in them, right? And which is the opposite of
dude.
Trump.
I'm so glad that you said that because I've been thinking the same thing, man. It's like a secret message embedded within it.
I've been looking really hard. I'm on to something. I've almost got there.
So you too have seen the pattern.
Absolutely. So somebody's tweeting for him for sure. I mean, maybe more than normal. Who knows? Right. And then of course, JD Vance said that like fucking weird thing where he was like, the president is fine. But just so you know, I've learned a lot since being vice president, and I could totally take over if he was to like die or something. And it's like, why did you say that, man? What the fuck?
Melania has also been seen at Walter Reed, but come on, y'all. She's probably reading
crying.
Books to kids.
Crying. What are we talking about? Laughing out loud. Skipping down the hallway.
Yeah, I'm sure she's asking all the right questions. When can we pull the plug? Can we pull the plug now? Is now a good time to pull the plug? Yeah, and then some photos of Trump were seen. There was some of him golfing with another guy, but those were found to have been posted like
those,
on the 23rd.
They weren't from today. They were from like last month.
Yeah, and then of course there have been some photos of Trump just like his mouth agape, his eye looks a little droopy, and his hand is
yeah. So everybody's having fun. I mean, like, I think that the speculation from, I'm going to be honest, right? I think these are all insane people, right? Like, I don't think he's actually dead. I don't know if there's any evidence to suggest that he's had a stroke. It is weird that he hasn't, like, shown up in a while and very, like, non-Trumpy, right? Which actually dates back to, like, the Trump... Did we talk about the Trump-Putin summit, the non-starter that happened, like, last week?
The three-hour meeting that ended with Russia bombing the shit out of Ukraine?
I mean, that's every day, but yeah, I mean, because he famously, right, like, they had a very quick press conference and fucking left, right, which I took as everybody being mad, but I mean, I don't know, cognitive decline, something, but, like, nobody knows anything, and mostly we're just having fun, and, but Connor, I know for a fact that a bunch of people do think this is absolutely 100% real.
Oh, yeah, I do. I do not believe he's dead for a moment. For not a second did I think he was dead, because, like I told you, I was like, I don't know. He seemed pretty active on Truth Social. But again, somebody else could be writing these posts. However, I am choosing to believe that he had a stroke. But here's the thing.
Sure,
I learned my lesson. I learned my lesson when he got COVID and everyone was like, oh,
yeah.
Of course, they took him to Walter Benjamin and gave him that, like, super,
they gave him the serum or something, right? Yeah. Like, it was like some weird word too. God. It was the actual COVID vaccine that works as opposed to the one that we got. Connor's tugging at his collar. He's like, yeah. Oh man, come on.
Yeah, no, they gave him the one that's like, this one doesn't have any of that mRNA crap, right?
Yeah.
And that's why he's fine.
We didn't put any of the fake mRNA stuff in your vaccine, Mr. President.
There's no chip in yours.
No poison. No chip.
No, Mr. President. This version of the vaccine will not make you Chinese. Like, good.
That's why he called it that, by the way. That's why he kept calling it that. He couldn't forget that they told him that, a Walter Reed. Holy fuck, man. what are our actual topics for this fucking episode, Connor?
Well, we had two things. One is, three things, actually. One, we wanted to do a little brief follow-up on the argument, but we can get to that in a second. First, let's talk about the big scandal, or as I see it, non-scandal. You see it as a scandal.
Yeah. Connor and I disagree again. This is a famous, wonderful Alec and Connor debate episode.
But Taylor Lorenz wrote an article for Wired, basically, you know, shining a spotlight on how all these Democratic leaning pundits get their money, which is from the Chorus Group, Omidyar, 1630. Can you break it down a little bit?
Yeah. So, I mean, a thing that came out is that a bunch of, let's say, content creators, right? Like, imagine YouTubers, fucking TikTokers.
The two names I know off the dome are Olivia Juliana, a centrist Gen Z influencer, and then David Pacman, who hosts a talk show.
The only one I knew by name was Pacman, because he's been around forever. And, like, he's your kind of, you know, fine, unassuming, I guess, like, liberal commentator. I don't have anything particularly against Pacman. And then I guess I don't want to say Juliana. I was like, oh, yeah, the fat woman. But Juliana is like, I have seen some clips of her. I'm not on TikTok, but, like, she immediately presents as extremely in your face and annoying. So, you know, kind of funny.
She gained some notoriety within the Democratic Party when she became a very vocal advocate for codifying Roe v. Wade, very, very outspoken against the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And Matt Gaetz of Florida fame then said, well, something that was like, yeah, right, like, anyone's trying to get you pregnant, and that just, yeah, like,
very gross, right?
Yeah, like, and that just skyrocketed her to fame and got her more of a platform, and she has since gained fame after that by being the person the Democratic Party decided to hire and pay a lot of money to appeal to men and get men back, which is
I see these, like, I see these people broadly as the kind of, like, epic, you know, millennial and I guess now Gen Z generational people that, like, I'm a Democrat, but I do a curse, right? And it's like, this fucking sucks, right? And, like, they're generally kind of just counterposing the Democratic Party to the Republicans. They're broadly speaking, like, I'm talking about, like, Olivia's kind of her kind of influencer, right? Less a Pac-Man. Just kind of like these feckless shills, right? And it's not surprising to me at all, right? If it wasn't already extremely clear that people like Olivia Giuliana are getting money from, you know, some kind of dark money group, or just overtly, right? Like, you know, just getting donations from Democratic donors to make content.
Yeah.
But for guys like David Pakman, I think, by the way, both those are perfect, Connor, because they're like emblematic of the two camps, I'd say. Because Pakman strikes me, right, one of the reasons I find him inoffensive is he strikes me as the kind of guy, and I think he projects, right, through his like advocacy and through his commentary, that he's kind of independently arrived at his worldview, right, and that his critique is not solely of one side or another, right? It's simply more critique piles up about conservatives than they do about liberals. And like, that's a thing that I kind of broadly agree with, right? And to find out that a guy like Pakman is getting just straight up money to not do a thing, right? We should maybe talk about the contours of Chorus, but that is actually gross to me, right? Like, I think less of Pakman because of that. Right. Yeah. I don't think I can think less of a person like Olivia Giuliana or that much more. Right. Like,
yeah, no, I think with Giuliana, like, you know, she'd been paid by the Democratic Party for a while now. She spoke at the DNC. Like I said, she was hired to figure out how do we get men back, young men back into the fold, which, dude, just get a six pack and like sit in the parking lot and find out what the fuck they want
on our podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. So for Giuliana, it's not that surprising, right? Pakman, I've never really been too much of a fan of. I have a colleague at school, a friend of mine, who is a big Pakman head, and I have not heard from him, but I did troll him by saying, like, your boy's in trouble. I said, your boy's on the take, and I haven't heard from him since, so I think he might just be like, fuck you, dude.
Well, you know what? It's true.
But I also think that I don't know. Part of me does feel like the people taking this money, that kind of must be what they believe, or at the very least, their convictions are not that strong. Like, if they're just like willing to stay with the party line for a paycheck, that might just be what they believe. I'm not sure.
So I'll say like most charitably, and correct me if I'm wrong, because like this went off or whatever, right? Like, I think it was on Thursday. And I called Connor kind of in a tizzy, and I was like, whoa, bombshell, right? Like, it's really happening. There is the dark money shit going on Twitter. Wow. And I think your response was like, yeah, of course they're doing this. And like, and I will say, right, like, this is not surprising. And it would be, you know, in a way, it would be even more embarrassing if we found out that the Democrats were so incompetent that they never did shit like this.
Yeah,
I guess the thing is that this stuff, broadly speaking, is bad, right?
To the thing that you and I were saying, to the thing you just said about, like, we'd be more embarrassed if we found out the Democrats weren't doing this. So the last three paragraphs of Lorenz's article were incredibly frustrating to me. In the third to last paragraph, she does point out that in September of 2024, it was found that Russia Today was covertly providing millions in funding to Tenet Media. And so that had Benny Johnson.
Tim Pool.
Yeah. So a lot of people got in busted for that. And yet no one really faced any consequences except for the people running Tenet Media. Right. And no one fucking cared. They didn't see a drop in their revenue. Like, they're doing just fine. And then it goes on in the very last paragraph. I'm going to read this out loud. Stephen Buckley, a digital media sociologist at City St. George's University of London, says that these sorts of programs have been happening in the right wing for ages. Going on, the Democrats appear to have no real counter to this system. And when I read that, I was like, well, they did until you fucking reported on it. You bozo.
Oh,
like, they were trying to do
take. the take cannot be like, we should keep this under wraps so the Democrats win. Like, these.
No. That's not my take. That is absolutely not my take. It's just in that last paragraph saying the Democrats appear to have no real counter to the system. It's like, then what was your fucking article about?
Oh, well, then, yeah, I mean, I guess this person was doing background and like is shrugging their shoulders as to like, where is Koch Industries for the Democrats? And to be honest, right? The real answer is it's Koch Industries. But like the other one is it's a bunch of Silicon Valley like freaks, right? It's all the like it's all the now abundance coded, right? Like Facebook guys, right?
Or you have the freaks like Sam Bankman-Fried, who's just like I'm giving money to fucking everybody.
Oh yeah, absolutely. What
I say. Yeah,
and there are people that are like funders that are honest to God, right? Like Democratic donors.
It's all part of the same fucking political machine to me. Like, I have a really hard time saying like, can you believe David Pakman took money, and not just being like, can you believe that Richie Torres is taking money? Like, yeah, they all are on the fucking take. It's just lobbying on a different level.
But I mean, I guess it's not Richie Torres, right? Like, it's obvious Richie Torres takes money, but are you surprised that Steven Crowder takes money? And it's like, no, God, right? Like, to me, the issue hits a little bit more to home because like, I am a person who is more in this kind of like independent media space that Chorus is trying to like move into. And it is troubling to me that, like, as in all this dark money stuff, right? Like, you don't know what the aims are of the people that are giving the money. You don't know in Chorus's case what, you know, because I don't know if Chorus is going to disband or is going to stay around. I'm not exactly certain if that relationship will change, and they will demand. Hold on, we still have to go over like what occurred here.
Okay, so basically the big drama, and we can, you know, give this to you in a nice, tidy little package, is that a bunch of these Democratic influencers or content creators that publicly align themselves with the Democratic Party were working in a group chat. We're basically all communicating within a group chat and some emails on, you know, what they can and can't talk about. And they were getting their orders basically from a nonprofit called Chorus. Now, Chorus was receiving money from receiving funding from what's been called a dark money group known as the 1630 Fund. And it's a left of center lobbying and advocacy organization. And it was created with some seed funding from Americans United for Change, Acorn, US Action, the Sierra Club, and Working America. And they also received some money from the Omidyar group. The Omidyar group, I believe, is what it's called. And so, yeah, it's just.
And by the way, like 1630 is ostensibly like a progressive movement. Right. Now, what that actually means at the end of the day. Right. Like what it's expected to espouse, as we've gone over in the past. Right. Like the abundance guys consider themselves progressive. Right. And so like that. I think if you're honest, I think that's it's not that it's meaningless, but let's just say it's a big tent, right? A lot of people will describe themselves, especially in marketing, as progressive, and then they're never going to be asked a question. Well, what does that mean to you? And like, what part of your platform would you describe as progressive? You know,
dude, that's interesting that you bring that up, because something that's been on my mind a lot lately is Olivia Giuliana really markets herself as I'm a centrist. And I keep wondering, because I've known other people who declare themselves centrists. I'm like, what does that even fucking mean? What are your beliefs? And I think centrist just means like I believe some of this, I believe some of that, but ultimately they try to do that like, well, I'm galaxy brained. Yeah, I can like see beyond the binary or something.
I really do. I mean, seeing some of Giuliana's content, I really like. The Hillary Clinton particles, right, are like very, very high in any room that she's in and anytime she speaks.
Yeah. Like, are you a Goldwater Republican who's now a Democrat? Yeah. Is that like make you a centrist? Like, are you an I-centrist for being like strong believers in the Second Amendment?
Maybe. I mean, it's like, well, what Connor, I think that's the opposite thing that like a person like Giuliana actually means, right? What they mean, I think, by a lot of times what they mean by centrist is, I'm not going to be defined ideologically, and I'm not going to make a strong rule stance against any of these things that you would ask me about ideologically, because I would like to respond, because my response is always going to be, like Hillary Clinton, that it's really a case by case thing and you can't nail me down. And what that means is, sometimes you support the Iraq war, Connor, and you know what? That doesn't make you any less liberal, right? It doesn't make you any less progressive when you give weapons to Israel, right? Like, I'm not joking, right? I think that centrism from a person like Giuliana means I don't want to be held down by any kind of actual defining, like defining words that would have a strong ideological component. Right.
Or
you're going to ask me about those and I'm going to have to say, I don't know.
Or this is another thing that ties Giuliana to Hillary Clinton again, the Hillary Clinton particle. What that means is that, like, how much did that check for? Okay, this is what I believe.
Exactly. And so, like, and by the way, like, I think that's one of my fundamental frustrations is I think as the left, right, as progressives, I think it's pretty vital for the future of any kind of like electoralism, if that's a thing you believe in, that that progressive movement is counterposed to these structures of like of oligarchic power. And dark money shit is always going to be that. This is not the dark money group is not going to be a funneling vehicle for small individual donations a la the Bernie Sanders campaign. It's going to be some fucking billionaire, right?
Yeah.
And it's going to come with secret NDA like clause fucking contracts that are going to hold you to some, you know, unknown and possibly weird policy censorship, right? Or like messaging censorship that you might not even really understand, right? Like abundance, right? You might not even understand that like not talking about this thing is actually caping for some, you know, bill about AI or God knows what, or like some kind of weird labor dispute thing, but sure as hell, right? Like, oh, are you not talking about a candidate, right? Are you not talking about some like assembly person, right? Is actually
trying
to
talk about Zoran.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly right. And that's what I think is shitty and dangerous and why I think that this actually should matter. Now, Connor, you're right, right? Like, is this going to fucking change anything? No. Does this mean that, by the way, there's not like two dozen of these that are probably bigger than fucking Forrest already? Like, no.
I just think that this is just the media arm of the Democratic machine. Like, there's a reason why Hakeem Jeffries and Kathy Hochul like aren't really coming out and praising Zohra Mamdani, and why other smaller Democrats aren't really doing it. Why it took so long for AOC to say anything. Like, they're all waiting for their marching orders. They're all waiting to hear from their donors. They're all waiting to hear from the party leaders. And this is just, it's not that I'm cynical. It's just like, yeah, I think that's how the party works. I think that's how the Republican Party works too.
Yeah, is that
it's just unsettling to see like the Mechanical Turk, the insides of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why it's important. I mean, like I hope that that's not true about somebody like AOC. I mean, that's a person I've been, you know, pretty vocally disappointed with, but I'm hoping that's not true. But I don't know that. And when you have people that are allowed to kind of openly defend this kind of practice and say that it's not a big deal or by the way, right, like I think one thing that's been happening, speaking of propaganda, right, like attacking Taylor Lorenz, I feel like, as opposed to the actual contentions of the piece, I think I see you like kind of rolling your eyes, but like some of that's been happening.
Yeah,
right?
It absolutely has. Not a single person named in the article has given a specific rebuttal to any of the claims Lorenz makes. They do attack her personally, and their attacks on her person, most of them are also accurate, but they are not defending or rebutting the merits of the article itself and or the contents of the article itself. And I think that that's very, very telling and very, very funny to me.
The other thing is they're just doing, I mean, like, I know that we're just like, actually Democrats just acting like Republicans, but it is kind of shocking when like a guy like David Pakman just comes out and says like, this article's been debunked. And it's like, no, David, it has not, right? Yeah. They're just doing fake news. That is what like the Trump fake news line is.
My ultimate take on this is that I'm actually glad the Democrats are doing something like this. Because it shows like all the time they set up this reputation of like, we lose on our own terms. and this whole time we've just been like, you guys are so fucking feckless and spineless and frustrating. And now we see like, oh, you actually are willing to do dirty shit to win and get ahead. Good.
I see it the opposite way. I'm glad that this got written and comes out in the media because it's another point that I can yell and scream about and say, don't vote for these corporate shitheads, right? Yeah. You got to work in concert with some kind of progressive movement. Right. These guys are all, fucking bought and paid for. They're gross. If they sound like this, they're gross. If they sound like Olivia Giuliana, fuck them. They're gross. They're owned.
Yeah. None of these people espouse politics that I agree with. Let me be abundantly clear there. I vote for the Democratic Party mostly because I am shackled to them. But it's just nice to see, like, after a month of just seeing a picture of Hakeem Jeffries holding a bat or Chuck Schumer being like, we changed the name of the big, beautiful bill to the bad bill or something stupid like that. It's like, oh, OK, so you do have operatives that are willing to like kill some, well, not kill someone, but willing to like do like dark shit for to combat this stuff, right?
Imagine Hakeem Jeffries holding a gun. Imagine him holding a imagine him holding a brick of C4, right? That's the kind of like crazy messaging I want to see.
It's
right?
Like that, what is that movie? Is it
Kingdom with the priest?
Yeah. Ethan Hawke wearing the fucking bomb vest.
Fuck yeah.
Do we want to talk about why I think it's so funny they're coming after Taylor Lorenz?
Sure.
Because I think it's worth talking about. So Taylor Lorenz,
first reformed, by the way, first reformed.
So Taylor Lorenz had been attacked by the people named in this article on some actual shit that she did do and is now claiming that she did not do, which was she posted an ad on her TikTok celebrating this app called Bark, which makes cell phones for kids, basically. And she has also been writing quite extensively about how phone bans in schools is a way to control children. It's evil. We shouldn't do it. And so she puts out this ad.
Speaking as a parent, controlling children is a necessary part of being a parent or doing anything with them. Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry,
also,
Taylor.
Also, like, a lot of teachers have come out to say, like, hey, if you get rid of phones in schools, guess what? Violence goes down. People pay attention. The students want to be engaged more with projects. They get bored easily. So we have to, like, keep them entertained and not, like, edutainment, like, keep them engaged with the lesson. They actually want to learn. And drug deals have gone down in schools. Like,
oh, absolutely.
It's
bad from the top to the bottom. My wife just got done watching another one of these like brain poison shows about like cyberbullying in like high school. And like every time I see this shit, I'm just like, why are these kids allowed to have cell phones? They just should not have cell phones.
No, not at all. And you know, Lorenz doesn't have a kid. Lorenz doesn't have a kid in school. And so, yeah, of course, they don't know what they're talking about. But this ad is really interesting because she did use hashtag advertisement and she did include an affiliate link in this video that she posted, which she has since deleted. Which is a shame because I did comment on it.
I think she did post the, like some fucking email where like the company said that they didn't pay her. And she's like, I just love this company. And it's like Taylor, like, one, that's weird. And like this, just don't respond to this. Right? Like, I don't know.
And when asked about the affiliate link, according to Jesse Singal, who was like, no, this is what she told me. She's like, I included the affiliate link because I thought it would be a courtesy to this company that I love. So they could track how like my talking about them would boost the awareness of their product. I'm like, you made an ad.
Do you expect me to believe that? I'm sorry, Connor. Do you believe that? Because like I kind of like Taylor Lorenz, and I generally like defend her journalism again, especially this time, right? For this, and it's like, what the fuck is that? What the fuck?
I don't think her journalism is inaccurate. I think she is a good journalist, but. Yeah, like this scandal broke like 4 days before the Wired article, so it is like not the time. As I told you, this
is
like
difficult to be a fan of.
Yeah, as I told you, the best way I can compare it is that it's like literally Trump saying like Bill Clinton was on the Epstein log. It's like, yeah, so were you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why are you bringing that up?
Yeah, what are you doing?
Shit.
So Taylor Lorenz, if you are listening, one, I know that you'll immediately start tweeting about this because that's just like what you are fucking known for. You retweet your shooters and like spend a lot of time like insulting anyone who comes after you.
Hey, we love a poster here. Okay.
We love a poster.
Keep going, girl. We're there.
We're not liking
or retweeting your shit. I don't even follow you, but go for it.
who better than a poster to be a journalist that covers like internet culture?
Yeah,
truly.
True. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
You speak the language. Yes. Taylor Lorenz, please keep writing. You are a good journalist. This article is good. But you are doing the same shit.
You have to have the soul of an insane internet person. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just funny that she deleted that ad and didn't delete any others.
Yeah. But anyway, Fuck anybody that took money from Chorus. We don't have time to talk about a progressive victory pack or whatever, right? This like the kind of related one with like the Destiny streamer, like that guy, like all of his guys like laundering money. But go look that one up. It's also funny.
All right. So our final thing today, we'll talk about the argument and then we'll talk about the pundit, right?
Okay.
So last week's episode, which sorry for the sporadic release of episodes, I'm moving and I don't know where. And so we're going to release episodes when we get a chance.
Connor has been fucking evicted.
I haven't been evicted. My landlord died. we trust me, if this podcast ends, we will at least make an announcement thanking all 40 of you for sticking with us as long as we have. So we released an episode last week about the argument. And since then, we recorded that episode like the day the argument launched.
Yes,
and in the moment between the record and the release, it had all fallen apart online. And all the writers were arguing with each other on Twitter.
It was so sick.
It was so awesome to just see like Kelly Piper, Matt Brunig, and Matty Iglesias just like going at each other. And it got to the point where Jerusalem Dimsoth, like, I think she made them stop fighting on Twitter and was like, can we just like do this on the website and make content out of this?
Yeah, please post on the Substack, guys.
Which is just like, I ain't reading that. I was barely reading the argument. But
she like perfectly on brand. I think people were like, man, your magazine really seems like the confluence, I guess, of like different ideologies clashing really seems to be working out. And she's like, yeah, no, this is exactly what we wanted. It's just like just like Iglesias and Matt Brunig just like in a fucking 30 tweet long like thread replying to each other. It's like, okay, so whatever you say, girl.
Like, yeah. And that's the other thing. It's like, who is this for? People with clicky clack jobs who don't really work, or people who shit on the toilet all day? Because how else are you going to read these arguments?
You don't have to shit all day, Connor. You just have to shit for the 20 minutes it takes to read the Twitter thread.
All right. So Gabriel sent in a column from Harper's Magazine dated December 1980. And it is about Walter Lippmann. Now, if y'all don't know who Walter Lippmann is, he wrote a book called Public Opinion. And three things that he believed are the average person is incapable of making any kind of democratic decision. And he called for a technocratic elite council that would basically run all of our country and all the media. And this council would determine the truth and what the public needs to know. And I think that's important to keep in mind.
He is like the closest, if you've ever like studied Chinese legalism, he's like the closest to like an American like legalist. It's really sick.
That's the religion, like the spiritually infused view of bureaucratic governance, if I'm
correct? Yeah, basically. Okay. Guys that are like like that even like the truth should be decided by like a shadowy cabal, right? They're like, they're the guys who are like, look at the shadowy cabal and just give it like a big thumbs up or whatever. That's the so Chinese version of thumbs up is.
All right, so I want to read this column, The Pundit, because I think it's pretty good, and as Alex said earlier in the record, it rings true even today. The Pundit. There was a term, nicely indicative of the morbid sensitivity of most journalists, which was much in vogue on the press planes and buses of the recent campaign. Bigfoot. One would hear it hissed in just those accents of horror familiar to fans of biblical epics, where the sleeve of the mendicant is inadvertently turned back to reveal the diseased skin beneath. Leper. Bigfoot was used to describe any senior officer of the press permitted by status and function to leaven fact with advertised opinion. An opinion journalist, one might say.
yeah, seriously, perfect.
Whether a Joe Kraft, an Anthony Lewis, or a Hugh Seide, the reaction provoked among the troops was analogous to that of a general visiting the trenches in the First World War. Among the smoke of press releases, the steady roar of campaign oratory, the screams of the wounded scampering toward daily deadlines, he would make a dignified tour of inspection, briefly confer with the candidate and senior officers on the spot, and scribe a few paragraphs of sagacious observation in his notebook, and return to the soft life in Washington. when finally published, the Bigfoot observation would be read by the troops he left behind him with spite and derision. How could the Bigfoot know the sentiments of the candidate he recorded in Pittsburgh? His novel and refreshing insights had been daily staples of the stump for the previous 6 months. That the, quote, stumbling and exhausted campaigner he espied in Austin had merely been suffering from a bellyache and was as fresh as a daisy the following day. The Little Feet, campaign regulars, would thus comfort themselves in some temporary bivouac, a Howard Johnson, a Holiday Inn, before trekking forward to the next deadline. Most journalists would like to be Big Feet all the same, enjoying the good life on the op-ed page, with a mind relatively uncluttered by facts and a notebook nicely filled with opinion. Yeah, no shit. That's why we have a podcast.
Delicious. Yeah, I know. This is so good. I mean, it does like, we are not being paid. We are not being paid to do this, and we have no journalistic integrity whatsoever. At least I don't. Right?
Well,
I comment on what I see on the internet.
Well, that's not quite true. Like, we do get paid by that super PAC.
Oh,
like we're not allowed to talk about
that, Connor.
Yeah, we're not allowed to talk about or.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, the Bigfoot or pundit need not be in lockstep with the facts, but is permitted by function to move fractionally athwart the prejudices of his publishers, his readers, and of course his regular sources. The Bigfoot is permitted by sociological function not merely to report the lies of others, but to contribute some lies of his own. Thus, he is a senior officer in what we are pleased to call the opinion-forming process. The publication of Ronald Steele's Walter Lippmann and the American Century concerns the biggest foot of them all, a man by the measure of whose perceptions and social utility the opinion-forming profession must stand or fall. Yet scrutiny of Steele's excellent and pitilessly faithful account of Lippmann's life and works reveals that most of the time he was wrong about everything, consistently receptive to blunder, and that on the rare occasions when he was right, no one paid the slightest attention. Consider the record. In 1914, Lippmann should have seen the writing on the wall. In consort with high-minded colleagues on the New Republic, he was insinuating himself into the good graces of Teddy Roosevelt, but made the mistake of criticizing one of TR's onslaughts on Wilson. Roosevelt forthwith denounced the editorial board of the New Republic as being composed of 3 circumcised Jews and 3 anemic Christians. This should have accurately conveyed to Lippmann the constraints of access and the parameters of constructive criticism of the powerful. He was not deterred. In 1916, he was campaigning for Wilson, and by the following year brought untold suffering on the world by coining the phrase Atlantic community, a pundit standby ever since. Another lifelong cliche he shouldered at this time was his perception of the, quote, general slouchiness and distraction of the public morale. Boy, how can you be for the people and hate the people?
Mm-hmm.
Ted Rawl said that on our episode. I think about it all the time. By 1917, he was dressing up the unpalatable in terms of the exalted traditional pundit task and justifying U.S. intervention in the First World War by saying it would lead to a transvaluation of values as radical as anything in the history of intellect.
I love this, right? Like, I mean, once you cut through all of the wordiness, right, of the kind of early 20th century, it is so perfect that he's like, what we're actually doing is spreading the ideals of America, right? It's like, oh yeah, it's so refreshing to know that nothing has changed. Like
nothing. He was also dodging the draft on the grounds that he wanted to, quote, devote all my time to studying and speculating on the approaches to peace. You fucking coward. With no trace of self-consciousness, he asked Secretary of War Newton Baker for an exemption for, quote, the things that need to be thought out are so big that there must be no personal element mixed up with this.
I wouldn't want to be swayed by having to dodge bullets in a fucking trench to think about these so big thoughts.
You want me to praise our actions in the war? Great. Don't send me to that war.
Yeah. The implication there is that like the big thoughts might include siding with the enemy, I guess. Like
pacifism.
I might desertion. Really like the Germans, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be swayed by not wanting to get shot. You're right.
He added thoughtfully that, quote, I'd rather be under a man, i.e. Baker, in whose whole view of life there is just the quality which alone can justify this high experience. Lippmann always knew how to flatter his sources and patrons, usually identical.
Woo!
And October,
this is why we can't have this dark money shit. It's because, I mean, and it's the other thing, like the, we've talked about the NED before, Connor, but like that, yeah, that fact that like you don't really even have to, after a while, you don't even really have to tell these people what to say and what not to say, because you will weed out the ones that say shit that you don't like, to where you only give money to the guys that intrinsically know what kind of opinions they're supposed to have, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'd be really funny if in that Lorenz article there was like, they tried to get Hassan on board and he said no thanks. Yeah, like they would never email Hassan or the Chapo guys and be like, hey, you guys want to make some money?
I think the other one, though, the one that was found out, is, I think it was a couple months back, Progressive Victory, which is another one of these stupid outfits. Those guys actually did, I think, approach Hassan and maybe even some of the Chapo guys as kind of a, I mean, I guess the theory is that they did that as a kind of laundering mechanism, and they said that they were going to say no anyway. Or it might be one of those things where they're like, we have a big tent. We've even sent an email to these like anti-Semitic lefties like Hassan, right?
So funny.
Their words, not mine.
In October of 1917, just as he was extolling the war as one certain to, quote, make a world at a safer democracy, he discounted the inequities of domestic censorship by saying, I have no doctrinaire belief in free speech.
Subsequently, well, that's good.
Yeah, that's good. Subsequently engaged in the manufacture of propaganda in Europe, he proposed to explain to German and Austrian troops the unselfish character of the war, the generosity of our aims. We should aim to create the impression that here is something new and infinitely hopeful in the affairs of mankind. Only in 1930 did he bring himself to confess that the intellectual rationales he had provided Wilson to intervene might have been misguided.
Whoopsie.
We supplied, he brooded comfortably, the battalions of death with too much ammunition. Well, don't worry, Alec and listeners. This is just the first war that he's wrong about. All right, yes. Let's move on.
Surely this will not happen again. And surely, by the way, that these statements surely will be like imbibed by future generations and like heeded as a warning, right? And not just like quickly burnishing your CV before just like moving on to the next thing, right? It's so fucking embarrassing. Everybody does this shit, and then everybody like, oh, and that war's over, I guess. Time to do something. Time to write about something else.
Yeah, what's that quote? Liberals are for every civil rights movement except the one we're currently in,
yeah,
and against every war except the one we're currently fighting.
Except the one we're currently fighting, yes.
Yeah. All right. In 1922, in that execrable volume called Public Opinion, nice, he produced a fully-fledged pundit credo. Quote, the common interests very largely elude public opinion entirely and can be managed only by a specialized class. That's that technocracy that we were talking about.
Execrable is such a good word. It's poop, y'all.
Yeah. Lippmann thought that intelligence bureaus staffed with pundits, him, would meet that need and aid the outsider adequately. Simultaneously, amid fears in that year that too many Jews were going to Harvard, he was proposing that Massachusetts set up a state university to persuade Jewish boys to scatter. In 1925, he compounded the damage wrought by public opinion in The Phantom Public, where he concluded it was a, quote, false ideal to imagine the voters to be even inherently competent to superintend public affairs. Only the insider can make the decisions because he is so placed that he can understand and act. Mm-hmm. The Sacco and Vanzetti affair brought forth a characteristic display of mealy-mouthed fence straddling by Lippmann, who by that time was the chief editorial writer for The World. He sedately endorsed the infamous Lau report, which upheld the conduct of the trial, and finally, the day after the execution, praised Lau for suffering a, quote, disagreeable duty bravely. Measured as ever, Lippmann also doffed his hat to Frankfurter and others active in Sacco and Vanzetti's defense for their readiness to uphold the rights of the humblest and most despised. In 1928, hot for Al Smith, he naturally discovered a new Tammany that would bear comparison as to its honesty, its public spirit, and its efficiency with any other political organization which operates successfully anywhere in the country. That characteristic plunge into overstatement is, by the way, very common among pundits.
No but way.
Yeah.
That totally died out, by the way.
But Lippmann also admired Herbert Hoover, which provoked Steele to remark another pundit trait. Two virtually identical candidates with Lippmann's idea of a perfect election.
Yes. Oh, God, it's
dude,
awesome.
How hard he would have been for the Obama Romney.
Obama Romney. I mean, the thing that I remember is like the fucking West Wing election. I don't know if you ever watched like the tail end of the West Wing when they do like
any of it.
Oh my God, they're perfect. It's a Republican who's a Democrat and a Democrat who's a Republican. It's so awesome. It is literally two honest guys shaking hands and deciding on like deciding to like put away the differences for the future of the country, to the point where I think the Democrat wins and appoints the Republican as his vice president. It's so fucking lame, man.
Yikes. All right. boy, Aaron Sorkin.
He's furiously beating off and like it's just the word centrism on a page. What are you looking at?
We should do an episode on The Newsroom because I think it's one of the worst TV shows I've ever. It came out while I was working as a journalist and all my coworkers are like, this is amazing. It's like, I was like, this is the stupidest fucking show I've ever seen.
It was so painful. I don't know. You've seen it, right?
I've seen all of it. Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. All right. Keep going.
Yeah. We'll do an episode on when the Newsroom episode when Osama bin Laden died.
Yes. I didn't realize that the premise was they did all like real shit. And I was like, wait, I remember this happening.
It's always a year after. Every season is a year after when it actually happened. So they had the value of all that hindsight.
People thought that that was awesome. And I was like, this sucks. They're not going to write anything like they're not going to actually invent any events, right? They're going to basically do like the lazy Law and Order thing where they like take something that happened for real and then like crank up just like the racism like all the way.
It's something that's like The Newsroom, basically the whole premise is this is how journalists should have handled this event. And there's not a lot of interaction with like sponsors and the need to like,
why didn't they?
yeah. Right. Okay. On the verge of the crash with a new house and soundproof study and sustained by a higher salary, Littman was preaching a quiet indifference to the immediate and a serene attachment to the processes of inquiry and understanding. Democracy, he opined, cannot last long. It must, and inevitably it will, give way to a more settled social order. In 1931,
I what he means by that.
Oh yeah. Well, the next quote, the next sentence starts with "In 1931."
Yep.
At a dinner organized for him by Thomas Lamont of the House of Morgan, he discoursed on journalism and the liberal spirit. Who but a political hack can believe today? He told the assembled businessmen, lawyers, and jurists that the fate of the nation hangs upon the victory of either political party. Mm-hmm. Who can believe that the cure for the corruption of public government is to multiply the number of elections? Who can believe that an orderly, secure, and more just economic order can be attained by the simple process of arousing the people against the corporation?
Yeah,
a luxurious cruise.
Is it possible that is it possible that America has too much democracy, Connor?
Oh God, corporations are good. Actually, a luxurious cruise to Greece, courtesy of Lamont, followed 2 days later. Mm-hmm. Yep. In 1932, he displayed his usual acuity by attacking FDR as too cautious to take political risks, but came round to him rapidly, sustained by the counsel of one of his banker friends. That sounds like Peter Thiel, Trump, and J.D. Vance, but weird. whatever. Who wrote to him that for those who don't know, J.D. Vance absolutely hated Trump, and then Peter Thiel set him up with a meeting in March of 2021, 2 months after fucking January 6th, and now he's the fucking vice president. Yeah. Okay. Where was I?
Who wrote to him that quote, "The hungry and the unemployed might be hard to handle this winter if we were in for four more years of the same policies and the same president."
Yeah. Before receiving this prudent advice, Littman had opposed the Child Labor Amendment, a federal guarantee of civil rights, and the early payment of veterans' bonuses.
Oh my God.
When a proposal came up to provide pensions for the widows and orphans of veterans, he said that such a special interest group posed a menace not only to the budget, but to popular government itself.
He's literally like Mr. Burns. It's so sick.
Nor was Lippmann's attention restricted to domestic unrest. In 1933, just after books were burned in the streets of Berlin, he solemnly wrote that repression of the Jews by satisfying the lust of the Nazis who feel they must conquer somebody and the cupidity of those Nazis who want jobs is a kind of lightning rod which protects Europe, end quote. Mm-hmm. A week later, he was praising Hitler for a genuinely statesmanlike address that expressed the authentic voice of a genuinely civilized people. The word statesmanlike is the traditional mark of the Bigfoot. No higher term of praise exists in his vocabulary, for it is the attribute of the ultimate insider executive, who is beyond mere politics of the or the sufferings of the Jews or other groups of humans, and who works purely for the higher good. You know, this made me think about in 2020, when it was Biden versus Trump, how Biden being declared more statesmanlike was, yes. I believe hearing that over and over and over.
Presidential, right?
I think presidential. Yeah.
I love that this guy is just like, you know, Europeans, sometimes they just have to do a pogrom, right? Just to cool off a little bit.
Nothing unifies. Yeah, nothing unifies the people more than genociding another people.
Yeah.
Fucking stupid.
Golly,
what a,
man.
What an absolute ghoul this guy is. All right. In 1936, he was busy praising the British and the French for remaining neutral in the Spanish Civil War, since neither the legally elected loyalists nor the fascists were able to fit, another pundit word, to organize government, were able or fit to organize government. As the Spanish Republic was forced to turn to the Soviet Union for arms, he duly noted that it had steadily degenerated into a proletarian dictatorship under foreign guidance.
Boom.
Chided later for this view, he confessed that my mind works like a spotlight on things. And it wasn't one of the things I was interested in at that time. So much for the Spanish Republic. Yeah, very, very. How many times have we seen Matty Iglesias write, I'm no longer interested in this conversation?
Yeah, I mean, that is, I mean, like, it truly is insightful. Like the like his own self-description, like the mind moves from thing to thing and you don't actually see a through line between all the things you observe. Right. Like, you know, it'd be a shame to form rules about, you know, getting into foreign conflicts and shit rather than staying open. Right. And open minded to the possibility that, yes, we have to do this war, actually.
Like, yeah, I wasn't really thinking about it because when I was hanging out with Thomas Lamont in Greece, he didn't bring it up.
Yeah. Yeah. The kids do yearn for the mines. He made some very good points.
so much for the Spanish Republic. In 1937, he was at it again, coming away from Europe with the feeling that the Western democracies were amazingly complacent, distracted, easygoing, and wishful. A year later, concerned with distracted Europe's overpopulation problem, he suggested that a million surplus Jews be sent to Africa.
Well,
you may have guessed
somewhere.
Yeah. You may have guessed that Lippmann went for Wilkie in 1940. Ooh, damn.
Fucking a loser. Well, I mean, turning on his guy.
In 1942, when hysteria about Japanese Americans on the West Coast was reaching fever pitch, Lippmann concluded after a visit that the whole Pacific coast was in imminent danger of attack from within and from without, and that the enemy could inflict irreparable damage through an attack supported by organized sabotage. His column naturally compounded the panic and helped prompt the relocation of Japanese Americans into concentration camps forthwith. Later, Lippmann, having partly caused the panic, tried to excuse the relocations on the grounds that they were necessary to protect the victims from the mob.
Whoopsies. Yeah, we were protecting them by putting them in camps. It's so crazy. That's sick.
So fucking stupid.
Hey, I just wanted to bring up, you know that guy? So that guy Wilkie that FDR wins against?
Yeah.
He actually ends up dying somehow before FDR, which is very, very funny.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah.
Though he popularized the phrases national security and Cold War, Lippmann was relatively restrained and sensible in the post-war and McCarthy years. Being a thwart official consensus, he consequently had no effect. The pundit can never inflect government policy, only explain or excuse it. In his more excitable moments, however, he called in 1946 for a new mighty upsurge of new national economy to confront Russian aggression, urged the nation to be put on a war footing in the wake of the Prague coup of 1948, approved the dispatch of the 7th Fleet to the Strait of Formosa in 1950, and concluded in 1952 that it would be a catastrophe of enormous proportions if Southeast Asia were to fall into the communist orbit. He approved the Anglo-French attack on Egypt in 1956 with a classic piece of on the one hand-ism. Quote, we may wish that they had not started, but we cannot now wish that they should fail.
We have to do something. This is, it's like, by the way, thank you so much, Gabriel, for sending us this, because it's like, not only is this particular guy, fucking Lippmann, like, seems to be maybe the pundit, like the op-ed writer, but... Like in that he's like the most, he's like the ancient evil from with like all of that springs forth. But it's so, I already said it, but like, it's so crazy how none of this changes. None of it, man.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. Love affairs with Kennedy and the early LBJ prompted a defense of the first bombing of North Vietnam as a test of American will. In 1965, he considered retaliatory airstrikes to be wise ventures. Since they would put the U.S. in a better bargaining position for a negotiation. Knowledgeable of the corridors of power, he told Eric Severeid in a CBS audience in that year that war hawks are not found in the interior and at the top of the White House. In the same year, too, he endorsed the U.S.-backed coup in the Dominican Republic.
Oh, God.
Then, somewhat late, he discovered that LBJ was a hawk and that the war in Vietnam was a bad idea. Of the president, he said sadly, in the distressed tones of the betrayed pundit, he misled me.
Whoops.
How many fucking times have we heard that? Hillary Clinton and Matty Iglesias both have said that about Iraq.
Yep. We were misled. Please.
He went into opposition and ultimately exile in New York. Disillusion did not lead to wisdom. In 1968, he reported that there was a new Nixon, a maturer and mellower man. The emotions of Nixon's cool now, everyone.
Yeah. Mellower, like these cigarettes.
he got rid of his enemies list and has a friends list now. I'm on it.
Yeah. A hugs and kisses list. Oh, fuck.
Calling in Haldeman's like, you got to send these people an edible arrangement. I'm so sorry for what I did to them.
I'm out of lipstick to sign my letters.
Haldeman just like dripping with sweat and white nothing. Yeah, like, yeah. Why won't you kiss me? Why won't you kiss me? All right. Yeah. The emotions of contempt and mirth natural upon review of this catalog of misjudgment should, of course, be tempered by pity. Any journalist who has swung himself into the saddle of punditry and bigfooted it across country will know the temptations of the trade. It's bad luck on Lippmann that Steele had the energy to excavate the punditry of over half a century and lay out the results for all to see. Opinion columns were designed by God to have the same lifespan as a croissant.
Yep. They hate it when you bring up their old op-eds, man.
Oh boy, do they.
So, by the way, yeah, go ahead.
No,
coming up in two sentences is the reason why when Connor said I wanted to read this, I couldn't wait. Keep going, man.
The problem is that we do not have, as the Russians do, a press that is self-evidently and admittedly controlled by the state. When the Russian leadership wants to write an op-ed about Zbigniew Brzezinski, lacks statesmanship, the Central Committee gets around a table, chews a few pencils, and then puts the result in Pravda under a collective pseudonym. The column is then carefully studied by Pravda readers around the world as evidence of what the Kremlin thinks about Zbig.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is what you wanted to talk about?
No. I just wanted to see how you pronounce Zbigniew Brzezinski's name.
Well, I know his daughter... Mika.
She's hot. No, she'll fuck her. I'm going to cut that because it wasn't funny enough.
I
thought you were really going to cock it up, but I had to read it the way that all Americans do.
I read one of his books in American Foreign Policy, a course I took in college.
Yeah.
So, egg on your face, you piece of shit.
Well, all of y'all pronounce it like all weird, but you pronounce it exactly the way everybody else does.
Leave this in. I want the listeners to know this.
No. I'm cutting it. You'll not be hearing this.
just record yourself pronouncing it poorly and put it in over me.
Zbigniew Brzezinski. Zbigniew Brzezinski. All right.
The poor Russians have never. Well, it is kind of funny that I didn't get the accent right, but I did try to say Pravda.
Yeah, it is, by the way, impossible to say it right. the like Brzezinski's name.
Okay. The poor Russians have never quite fathomed the complexities of opinion production this side of the Atlantic. The one Soviet commentator did once tell me he thought the Freemasons were behind it all. That's very funny. They viewed Lippmann as someone roughly equivalent to a minister of information and made a great fuss over him when he came to town. They were generally correct in their estimate of him as a bipartisan functionary of the U.S. government and were consequently bewildered when the U.S. embassy would call up once in a while and tell them that the old sage was speaking for no one but himself.
Yep.
And that, to take one example, his tolerant view of their sphere of influence in Eastern Europe was not shared by John Foster Dulles. Yeah.
It really is like perfect how these people actually like the plausible deniability, right, of like the kind of op-ed class, right? Because they kind of they both like state and shape what like the U.S. state or like what particular parts of the kind of U.S. oligarchy think about the world and what they wish for like American policy. But at the same time, they're just guys, right? Like Lippmann and Max Boot and what's his name? Like Matty Iglesias, right? Like they aren't actual representatives of the U.S. state. So you can't get mad at them, right? You're not allowed to get mad at them because they're just some schlub, right? That gets paid to write for the paper.
All right. Lippmann was a special case in that he did not graduate to punditry after long years on the police beat, but parachuted into the editorial suite at a young age. He was born with big feet anyway, and probably emerged from the womb dictating a measured column on the first Japanese constitution, which is being promulgated around the time he entered the world. Punditry performed a couple of practical functions for newspapers. On the old principle that comment is free and facts are expensive, it takes care of a couple of pages on the cheap and give the publisher a proper sense of its own importance to boot. It also provides a stepping stone for those on the way from the newsroom to retirement. That's very true. A stint as sage in residence, and then the ink-stained old nag can be quietly let out to pasture. Okay. Clearly,
I think it does another thing, which is in this day and age, it generates clicks. Like it's rage bait, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. Clearly, there has to be some form of government regulation. Hang on. Let me finish this and then I'll say what I want to say here. Clearly, there has to be some form of government regulation to cope with the alarming pundit surplus. One answer might be... Now, this is funny, right? One answer might be to have a pundit Supreme Court with the 9 pundits nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate, handing down opinions and dissents after all due consideration and consulting a precedent. Mm-hmm. Ironically enough, this is kind of similar to what Lippmann wanted for American society and American governance.
Yeah, for
like
sure.
This technocracy that tells you what the truth is.
They're fucking eunuchs. They're like a court. They're like they're like the emperor's court and shit. That's how these guys see themselves. They're like, I'm a very important fucking a mustache twirler, right? Like a fucking beard petter, right? As I like puff on like a pipe and like think about stuff and like adjust my, you know, funny hat, right? The only thing that they lack like a physical uniform to wear, right? Like, they should make them like the Tang Dynasty, like have like long nails and shit, right? To be like, I don't ever touch the soil, right? Oh, I would never touch neither sword nor till, sir. Right. I am a thinker.
And I think I deserve a raise.
We're not going to do the accent, folks. We promise.
But yeah. All right. Okay. Where was I? Okay. Their conclusions would then be available to the news media for a modest fee. Fuck off. No other opinion columns would be allowed. In the case of consistent misjudgment, here, Lippmann springs to mind, recourse to impeachment would be available. The only other solution would be to have some sort of primary system and election of pundits.
Yeah.
Every 4 years, they could be answerable to the American electorate. I kind of like that. We elect who our late night TV show hosts are.
Well, I mean, it's worse than it was like in the Tang Dynasty, right? Because every time a war failed, all those guys would get fucking executed, right? Like, here's another option. Instead of the like Supreme Court or whatever, or like you keeping a job, you get sent to a fucking lumber camp, right? In Montana.
Well, yeah, that's better. Okay.
Would you seriously, you're like, I'm kind of interested in the pundit elections.
I would not run. No, nobody wants to hear what I have to say. I'm fucking crazy.
That's not true.
Well, what's the, I mean, you know, I've talked to you before about how I think that FDR orchestrated Pearl Harbor so that he could enter the have an excuse to enter the war through the Eastern Theater.
I don't think I knew that that was your opinion, but okay.
What's it called? Hang on a second. The McCollum memo.
Yeah.
Arthur H. McCollum being like, hey, I'm pretty sure that FDR is going to like impose sanctions and try to like piss Japan off enough that they attack Pearl Harbor. And it happened.
I mean, if it doesn't work for Russia, it doesn't work for Japan. You can never say you got baited into like an aerial bombardment. I don't know. That was just never worked for me.
Yeah.
But fuck it, man. Why not? We live in a day and age where you can believe whatever the fuck you want. It does not matter, especially if it like didn't even happen this past year or whatever. Like if it didn't happen in your lifetime, who cares?
Yeah, I guess the crazy thing I truly think about the contemporary world is like I think the Cracker Barrel shit was all made up.
Yeah.
Is that too radical?
No, I basically think the same thing. But like, I don't know. I wish that like Thomas Friedman hadn't stolen that fucking name, because like The World is Flat is such like a good description of like how it feels to not live in like a shared reality, right? It's just like none of this shit fucking matters anymore, man. The world is flat, right? Like you might as well believe that. It doesn't fucking matter.
All right, let me read this last paragraph and then we'll be done on this. The only other solution would be to have some sort of primary system and election of pundits so that every 4 years they could be answerable to the American electorate. Lippmann would not have liked that, and I doubt whether many of his successors would either. If there is one thing that causes a pundit's unease, it's the instincts of the herd in war or peace.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think, it's the same as it ever was. Like, this is a great article. It really does. I'm sure it like really tickled a bunch of people reading Harper's of all things in 1980 December. It's just really, really nice to see, like you said earlier, that this pundit bullshit has always been here and it's not going away.
Yep. Delicious. Delicious. Yeah.
And I mean, would you walk away from something like that if you could quit your job or be supplemented?
Oh, fuck no. That'd be the cushiest thing ever. I mean, like I don't know how stressful it is, Connor, to like try to follow the whims of like the oligarchy, I suppose, right? Or like the president, right? If it's that, or your donors, right? To the magazine or to like the publication, if it's that. But like, it can't be as hard as fucking working at McDonald's, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, the fact that the reason I say that is like that seems to be the only way these guys ever fucking get fired, right? Is if they piss off like the donors hard enough that they call the editor and get them fucking screwed. Like Iglesias is set for life, man. That dude is like a fucking millionaire.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, his daddy was like a famous novelist before, so like he was set. Like the path to punditry was paved for him. I think a lot of the pundits that the big for like the New York Times and other publications of that ilk, I believe that a lot of the op-ed writers are from prestigious families or have like a certain educational pedigree that just like destined them for there.
Yeah, and I mean that's kind of what I mean when talking about the other angle of like funding schemes like Chorus, right? Is it like that kind of guy, like a person that comes from the Ivy League or comes from like a good family, you don't have to tell them what their opinions ought to be, right? They know. They've known since they were fucking kids, right?
Yeah.
That's why they went to all those schools, those fancy schools, and got to rub elbows with the guys that actually like run, you know, corporations and are in government, right? That was to sculpt the proper opinions and approach and even like, I think, vocabulary, right, for those people.
It also helps, like, one of the things you said earlier of like the 1630 group, they know enough about you to approach you that like you're going to be a minimal to this kind of offer. Like, that's otherwise, they're not going to risk you going to the press. They're like, hey, a dark money group offered me money to like shut up about certain things. They know what you are.
Absolutely. Well, and I think that's a great place to stop. I mean, is there any other stupid bullshit going on that we can like end on?
Stupid bullshit.
Hold on. I do have one more thing to say because I made some notes real quick. So yeah, like it's again, right. The piece is very good. just the way it talks about like the not just the like the Supreme Court of pundits, right, or whatever, but it how it kind of like this pundit stuff does kind of presage the creation of like think tanks, right, and shit like that as well, right? And like I keep talking about Iglesias, right? Like the stuff about foreign policy more resembles exactly like Max Boot, right? Like much more so, like to a T, right? Yeah, it's just really good. I don't know, I might cut that. Okay.
I do have a dumb thing that we can go out on. Yet another piece of evidence as to why President Trump might be incapacitated at the moment.
Like permanently?
Yeah, yeah. So it gives me no small amount of joy. And in fact, gives me a large amount of joy to announce that Rudy Giuliani is hospitalized right now.
Oh, no.
Donald Trump has not commented on the injuries of his good friend, Rudy Giuliani.
Good friend. I thought he kind of left him for dead. He was just like, Rudy, you know, he was a good guy. I will not be mentioning again for the rest of my life.
Do you know what happened to Rudy Giuliani?
No.
All right. Let me read. Let me pull up the statement here. Hang on.
He fell into a chocolate river.
Oh, God. All right, where is that fucking statement here?
I love how small the, like, you know, like the Beast, like the super duper secure limousine or whatever.
Yeah,
I love how if you ever look it up, like, look how tiny the little windows are, because they're like super duper like reinforced, you know, like 2-inch thick, like plexiglass or whatever. They're like these tiny little, they look like train car windows in like a model, right?
Okay, I got it. You ready?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so Rudy Giuliani, he's in the hospital. He was in a car accident. And here's the official statement from his team. Official statement for immediate release. Oh, God. I hope I don't start tearing up while reading this. On the evening of August 30th, 2025, in New Hampshire, Mayor Giuliani was involved in a motor vehicle accident. Prior to the incident, he was flagged down by a woman who was the victim of a domestic violence incident.
Jesus.
Mayor Giuliani immediately rendered assistance and contacted 911. He remained on scene until responding officers arrived to ensure her safety. Following this, while traveling on the highway, Mayor Giuliani's vehicle was struck from behind at high speed. He was transported to a nearby trauma center where he was diagnosed with a fractured thoracic vertebrae, multiple lacerations and contusions, as well as injuries to his left arm and lower leg. His business partner and medical provider were promptly contacted and arrived at the hospital to oversee his care. At this time, no further updates are available. This is the only statement authorized by Mayor Giuliani. Signed, Michael Ragusa, head of Mayor Giuliani's security. It is very funny to me that these are two completely unrelated incidents, and he had to include, I totally helped a woman who was like scared.
Yeah, what?
And then I got hit by a car. And so if I die in this hospital, I died a hero. Everyone needs to remember I died a hero. I am America's mayor still.
I stopped to help a woman. She said her creep husband was beating her up.
So funny. Not funny that this woman was subjected to domestic violence. I don't believe that it happened. I think Giuliani made
that. Oh, that 100% did not happen. That is him.
Why had she not said anything yet? She would be like, he saved my life, and now he's in the hospital? I have to go to him.
A disappointed woman saying, like, yes, I did meet Mr. Giuliani.
Yeah.
Yes, so he did proposition me for sex before he understood that I was not a prostitute.
And no, this is not part of another Borat movie. This actually happened.
Yeah. She's underage.
All right. On that note, Excelsior, propagandos, and as always, keep your eyes on the skies.
Bye, guys.